Here we go.
All right. Welcome to another episode of the Joe and Doug Show. We're pumped that you're with us. Joe, how are you doing today?
Fantastic. How about you?
Great. I got coffee. I had a good lunch. We got conference tonight, tomorrow, which is going to be exciting. We're here with a friend of mine and guest, Scott Etheridge from Louisiana. Where in Louisiana?
Shreveport, Louisiana.
Shreveport. Now it's spelled Shreveport, right?
That's right.
But it's just Shreveport.
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 Yep.
And he's pastor of the Healing Place. He's launching a coffee business. Definitely has that entrepreneurial nudge that we talked about
Sweet.
On the show.
Very cool.
We want to get into a little bit of his story and stuff like that. How's stuff going studio? How's stuff going in Joe's world?
Good. We're doing a science show here.
So we
gathered a bunch of kids love blowing stuff up and lighting it on fire and exciting stuff. So we get to play. I get to act a little younger and they get to act a little older and we get to do some fun stuff.
Act.
Okay. All right. You got me.
Yeah. No, it's good. How's the show with Chef Don?
It's going good.
He was on the news this morning, I saw.
Was he?
Yeah.
I didn't get to see it, but he came in and did a segment and he cooked some fillets and it made my office smell amazing for the rest of the day. It was awesome.
Nice.
Yeah.
It's awesome. Well, we want to jump in and chat with Scott and just kind of, so we'll do some background here, story a little bit, and then we'd love to hear about the Healing Place, kind of what's being stirred. But we have tonight, this will air tonight, and when it goes on, we will be just in the throes of getting ready to start our services tonight. We have the Legacy Gathering tonight and tomorrow. It's going to be a ton
of fun. I pulled it live. This isn't going to record and go later, just so that we had
it's live right now.
It's live right now.
It's live right now. Hello.
So there you go.
Nice. Nice.
Little misdirection.
Yes.
I got you that time.
Okay.
Nice.
Well, the reason it's live right now is tonight.
You changed his pitch. I love it.
Yes.
Yes.
Good. 7580 Glenwood Avenue, 7 o'clock. Doors open at 6.
Nice. Pitchman, right?
Yeah, we like that. So, Scott, how did you? Where are you from? Give us that. 5 minute background. Where were you born? What? How did you start pastoring, etc.?
Yeah, I was actually born and raised in the North. I'm from Michigan.
I get it. I know. I know where it's going. I already get it. Ohio. I get it. I got all of it, man. Got it all. Go blue. Anyway, just saying. Don't hate me. I was born and raised in Michigan, and my stepdad transplanted us when I was like 14 to Arkansas. So it was kind of just this culture shock going from Michigan to like hillbilly Arkansas was pretty wild. So I was raised in kind of a broken home. I was pretty messed up by the time we got to Arkansas and just kind of took my own little journey. But athletics was kind of I was drugs and athletics. I kind of played that game for a while.
And what did you do athletics-wise?
All of it. Track. I had a track scholarship to Kansas. I had a baseball scholarship to Arkansas. Minor league tryouts with Cincinnati as a pitcher, the Reds. Kind of just wasted it all away, man. Just blew it. So it was Army or jail. And I thought Army sounded pretty awesome.
Good choice.
Good choice. And so I went in the Army, went around the world, did a lot of stuff, a lot of cool stuff, but just kind of still kind of running and doing my own thing. Came back and had money for college. Thought, well, that sounds like a pretty decent deal. I was sitting in the back of American government class, just kind of checked out, was just going to do college and figure it out, this girl walks in, sits in front of me, and I love to tell people I fell in love with the back of her head. Just saw that hair, and I was just like, man, that's the girl. And sure enough, after class, walked out in the hallway, she was waiting for me. She was like, hey, you're going to walk me to my dorm. That was Tanya, and we connected, and then we ended up getting married and had a little baby girl. And then, one morning, she had my mom had tricked us into going to church, and Tanya didn't tell us anything about it. She didn't tell me anything about it. We had a new baby. She was like, bring the baby. And Tanya and I, neither one, we had never been in anything. We had no concept of anything, God, anything. Within an hour, man, it was different. We went home, and after that was over, had a true encounter and just radical, radical, radical transformation. And that night, all that happened around noon, 6 o'clock that night. I was standing in the crack house that I was in the night before, telling them about Jesus. And
so you were using the night before, and then the next night you showed up and were let me tell you what just happened.
That's right. Yeah, it was totally radical. It was crazy. And then a couple weeks after that, we were baptized and daughter dedicated. And like a month later, I was in this thing called youth ministry, and that was 27 and a half years.
Wow.
Yeah. So it's pretty radical.
That's wild. I have to introduce you to a guy, Sean. I don't know if he'll be at any of these services, but if he is, I'll make sure I do. So he came to our church in January because our recovery pastor went to a hotel, pulled him up out of there. 2 days later, he was in our service. Big dude collapsed on me basically Sunday morning, sobbing totally, but in an instant delivered. And he's actually sharing in October in two weeks at our recovery night his
nice
story the last 6-7 months of total, well, I guess 10 months now. So, it would be really cool to connect. He's very, very similar, and he's very much like, I have to share the story.
Yeah. Yeah. It was a total, total transformation. And so now our daughters are 28 and 25. Just had our first grandbaby, grandson.
Wow, congratulations.
So that is, I get to drive across town to pick him up every morning. So he and I get to hang out for the first hour of the day. And man, when I look at him, I just see 27 and a half years ago and how this story could be so different.
Yeah.
And how it's, you know, I never understood. You hear all the time, like people, like grandparents, they lose their minds over their grandkids, right?
Yeah.
And they're like a parent's worst nightmare. It's like sugar them up, give them everything the parents want, send them to the house, you know, all that stuff. And I never got it. I was just like, what is that thing that grandparents talk about? Like they talk about that thing. It's not that I love my grandkids any better than my kids, but there's just something to it. And I'll tell you, it's true. And here's kind of what I've come to. So here's a great revelation. All right.
Yeah.
Not really, but, but just here's my thoughts. It's like when we're raising our kids are so close to us. It's like our DNA in them. So when they succeed or they fail, we see a little bit of ourselves in that. We don't really see them as themselves. Mm. We kind of see them as kind of little us's, mini me's, you know,
that's so good.
But then when grandkids come, we kind of see them as they are. We don't see ourselves in them. And so I started thinking about, okay, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, right? These three, like the son of promise is the son, but he's not the one that fulfills it. He's not even the one that gets the name change. It's the grandkid.
Yeah.
Because that's legacy. Like when the grandkid comes, that means it's not going to die off. It's going to go on and on and on. And you kind of see them as themselves. So every time I look at him, I don't see myself. I just see him, you know? Mm. And it made so much sense. I was like, man, I don't love him any more than my kids. It's just so different. And so that's just kind of where we're living right now, man. That's so cool. It's a sweet spot.
Yeah. So you started in youth ministry and now you've been at the Healing Place. How long?
12 and a half years.
12 and a half years. And a lot of our podcast is about helping people take the next best step for themselves. We do a lot of coaching. We've had different, you know, done some live coaching with business leaders and different stuff like that. Joe has 10, 11 different entities that you run.
And
it's a lot.
Yeah.
And, from computer company to a home remodeling thing. You got a bunch of pots, irons in the fire. So what, you know, in leading church, and then you're also launching a coffee company.
Yeah. I want to know about that one.
So I have beans for us to try.
Okay.
He brought me 3 pounds of, what did you bring me? What different types?
You got two different Brazils, Brazil Sierra and a Brazil Gold. And I think there might be an Ethiopia in there. I think maybe. Yeah.
So you're roasting. You're like,
yeah, I'm roasting.
Oh,
yeah.
Good stuff.
Yeah, roasting.
Yeah. See, well, I'm opening a coffee bar and I'm going to sample like stuff that's not real close to us. We can have stuff shipped in and from other places. My brother, he also lived in Michigan. He had a little coffee joint up there and I fell in love with the coffee. So he sends me samples of it every once in a while. And I love getting different coffee.
Yeah. So yeah, we're doing all kinds of stuff.
That's
so
really cool. So, but as a leader, you have a team at the church and the coffee business is going to take off and other people are involved in that. What do you find to be some of the most important attributes for you as a leader? Cause some of the folks that watch, you know, young leaders, you know, you're chasing success and sometimes people cut corners and there's certain things that I feel like as I'm maturing as a leader that I go, you know what? That was really important in my 20s, but in my 30s or in my 40s, it's not so important.
Yeah, right.
And so what's some of that perspective that you look at now and go, you know what? here are the three things or the five things that, you know, just are keys for leaders, business leaders, church leaders, doesn't matter. Even personally, you know, you got to lead yourself first. So
if there's three, I would say number one is identity. Like, don't allow your identity to get lost in whatever you're doing. Don't allow title to kind of dictate your identity, who you are. Don't let that be your validation and your affirmation, because you're going to end up leading horribly because you're going to lose who you are. You know, it's like, right, if your title is CEO, or if it's assistant manager, or if it's pastor, or if it's whatever.
Or assistant to the manager.
Yeah. The moment you get caught up in that world, what happens when you don't have a title anymore?
Yeah.
Like, who are you when that's no longer there? And titles can change, and things like that can change. So I think number one, in order to be a good leader, you got to be secure in who you are. Like, and you got to know who that is. You know, it's like when you're leading, you know, I've always told people, you know, never lead like you have a cape, because a cape is it's not an accessory. It's a blockade. Mm. It gets you caught. And once you begin to believe that you're the superhero, like you're the guy,
yeah,
and everybody, and then what begins to happen is insecurity in your own identity. Now all of a sudden you become codependent on other people's codependency on you. Mm. Right. So now it's like, you have to have that affirmation back from them. And so I think number one is identity, man. Just be true to who you are. Cause for a lot of years I tried to be kind of what the mold told me to be.
Yeah.
And man,
I totally remember starting at Bridge of Hope. Now I'm a t-shirt, jeans, maybe yeah, a hoodie on a cool day.
Tell me you had a double breasted though. You pulled it out.
No. I never, if I can avoid a suit, I avoid it. Like, but I went out and bought like dress shirts, and I was showing up early. Mm-hmm. I had stuff tucked in, and I, you know, I was trying to come to, you know, staff meeting to be like the sage or the guru. I was going to have some nuggets to teach the team. And I got about 6 or 8 months in, and I was like, this just is not me. This is exhausting trying to be somebody that I'm not.
That's right.
And I finally just had to say to the team, like, this is who I am. This is what I'm good at. Now, maybe I'll grow into some of these things.
That's right.
But right now, like, you know, I'm a worshiper first. So we take an hour at the beginning of our staff meeting and we have worship going, and we, like, that's how I enter in. So this is what we're going to do.
Yep.
I'm going to show you who I am. This is how I go in. And it's been so much more relaxing to not have to be the 50-year-old lead pastor at 28, but trying to be, like you said, in that mold is tough. And I know you experienced this with business. You know, you've said a number of times that, you know, the biggest hurdle you had to get over is that no one else knows what they're doing either. And right, you started as a young business person, you're thinking all these people have their crap together.
They do not.
Nope. And so did you have to wrestle with that identity-wise a little bit to kind of come into your own and feel
thankfully
comfortable?
Thankfully, I got to see it in other people first, so I didn't have to personally first-person experience it. I got to see it happen so many times. I kind of got prepared through example. What you were mentioning, like, there's a lot of performers and musicians that come through here, and one of the themes that you see is that when they get on stage, they're being worshipped by the people who are at these things, and their confidence actually goes down because they know who they are,
yep,
and they're like, I'm not a good singer as they think I am, and I can't perform it. And they all honestly lose a little bit of who they are on that stage.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So I just try, you know, I began to kind of walk that road of trying to be something that I wasn't. And so again, it's not about clothes, but clothes can be an expression of that. Sure. Yeah. And so I was suiting up, you know, I was trying to say all the right things,
yep,
put the right filters in place. And then I just got to the place with, man, this is not who God created me to be. Like, God created me to be a leader, but not this kind of leader.
Yep.
And which leads me to number two, transparency. As a leader, listen, it's not telling everybody your stuff, but it is being transparent again with who you are, you know, because if people are going to be on your team, they need to know who they're coming in with, like, for real, not find out that there's something else behind the curtain.
Yep.
You know, once they get into it and they're like, whoa, wait a second, who's this guy? Like, this isn't the guy.
Well, it's like those people that interview well, right, or you come in and the company wines and dines you, and then
does not transition well.
Marcus, who you'll meet tonight, a great friend of mine, he's going to be launching a church out in Akron that I'm getting to be a part of coaching and helping him a little bit, and just a great dude. But he was a D1 football recruit, but he didn't have the grades to make it in. And Malone University out here in Ohio, they brought him out. You know, they showed him like the best side of the school. And I don't know if you know, Malone is not a huge school. And they showed him, you know, video and pictures of a football game. And he's like, wow, you know, thousands of people were there. Well, they showed him from the Hall of Fame game because they played the Hall of Fame stadium. And he tells that story. It's always quite funny. But
right,
it's the same thing. Like, when you go into an interview, you know, I've interviewed plenty of people. And they, you know, of course they're putting their best foot, and but you don't really don't know who's behind the curtain.
That's right.
But in the same way, even as a organization, you're putting your best foot in that moment. Is there a way really to speed up transparency, if that makes sense? Because I feel like transparency really takes time.
No doubt.
You know, authenticity, you know, you can feel when someone's authentic,
yep.
But even to get to know who all is there, it does take some time. And so maybe the interview is a bad process in that. I know we talk about all the time, being comfortable in our own skin is huge. How do you wrestle in the business realm, like with what you do, being Joe? Because I know you've told the story before, the first commercial that you ran for Youngstown Computers,
right.
And you were all upset because they made it about you.
And I didn't want it to be. I wanted to come on, company. What are you doing?
Right,
crazy.
But you are the business.
Well, and that's to answer your question. Like I come off first. Like I'm in that interview. I interview hundreds of people throughout the year. And same thing. They come in here. They say this thing, and I'm not even really taking it serious because I haven't really seen them yet, right? Mm-hmm. So what I'll do is I'll volley a vulnerability at them. I'll be like, you know, I'm prickly, and you know, and I do this wrong sometimes, and you know, I hope you can, you know, see past that. And what about you? And then if I lay down the vulnerability first, they're way more able to tell on themselves in some respect.
Yeah.
That's smart. How do you handle that? How do you work with your teams with transparency, authenticity? Obviously you model it, but are there exercises you do, or things you do in staff meeting? Do you create safe spaces for people to?
I think the way that we're built is we're built kind of from within. So most everybody on our team has come from kind of within as far as the church is concerned. With the exception of one of our team members, everybody's kind of quote unquote homegrown. So they kind of know the DNA. They kind of know the ins and outs. And I also think that, you know, one of the ways that you do that, being transparent, is being so willing to be wrong and blow it and own it.
Yeah.
'Cause when people see you do that, then that even lets them in further. Because now it's like, you know, we always hear that phrase, one step forward, two steps back. Mm-hmm. The thing I love about the kingdom is it's not that way.
Yeah.
It's like you can fail forward.
Yep.
Like, you know, the whole Maxwell principle, you know, failing forward.
Yeah.
Like you blow it, get up, own it. You're not going two steps back. You start where you're at. You know, it's kind of like with our kids, you know, we want our ceiling to be their floor.
Yeah.
We don't want them to have to go through everything. We want them to learn and to grow. But we don't necessarily want them to be like, okay, you got to start where I started, and that's the way you're going to. No. It's like, so I think just letting them in, and then when you blow it, just own it. Because a lot of stuff that, you know, we do, and even you, Joe, you're putting stuff out there. It's public. Like, there's no like grabbing it back.
Right.
Right.
And it's live. Apparently.
It's live apparently. So, and if you're like on live stream, or you're saying something from a platform, you can't just reach out and grab it. And so a lot of times I think what happens as leaders is we feel like we either have to divert away from that. So then we start using our leadership tactics where we can kind of walk around it and not acknowledge what just happened.
Yeah.
And I think when we acknowledge those things publicly and own it and learn from it and grow it publicly, like I think a lot of times we blow it publicly and then we want to like get right privately,
right?
You know what I'm saying? And so it's like I've become pretty good at that, where it's like not making fun of myself, but just owning it and just being, man, like what was that? What just happened with that? But like in a church setting, sometimes things can get a little, you know, and it's being willing to do those things. Putting yourself out there, whether it's good, bad, indifferent, whether you're blowing it or whether you're absolutely killing it because you're doing something different. You know, case in point, we're doing communion one day, right? And so we're doing it. Tanya and I are up on the platform and we're doing like the bread, the real good bread, where people don't want just a piece of it. Yeah. They're wanting to know if there's any leftover when everything's done, you know? And it's like everybody's grabbing it, you know? It's like, so we're doing that. And two of the little kids just walk up.
Yeah.
They just walk up there and Tanya's just like, and we have this thing, it's not a pulpit or a lectern or anything. It's a table, and it's been made from disaster wood, which in Louisiana means something. Because we have hurricanes all the time, you know, and so we have teams that go out in disaster response. And what they'll do is they'll turn trees that have fallen down on houses and stuff into things.
Wow.
And then they'll put them in different places, in businesses. They'll turn them into tables for studios, like all this stuff. And so they built this disaster table for us, and it's this massive table, but it's disaster. So they'll pull it out every week and set it on the, and we got this massive table, and we just call it, hey,
this isn't a service. We're just coming to the table. All right, let's just come to the table. And so she just grabs this little girl, sets her up on the table. We're in the middle of everything during communion. It's like, everybody be quiet. You know, she's like, sets her up on the table. And the other one's going, hey, give me a cup, give me a cup. And yeah. I'm looking around and I was just like, okay, if this is your first time here and you were expecting everything to be normal, this is not the place for you. Like, this isn't normal. But this is how these kids learn about what this really means. You know, it's a safe space to learn. So just acknowledging those things and being willing to take scrutiny, whether it be that or just being willing to take a risk because you are being yourself, you're secure in who you are, you know, you're being transparent with who you are. And then third, man, I would say that I don't care what you're leading in. Your personal life and your family is key. You know, how you lead that, how you deal with that is going to transfer into every other thing you do, whether it's business, whether it's church, whatever it is.
Yeah.
How are you leading your family? And are you doing, are you secure in who you are in your own family?
Yeah.
Are you transparent with your own family? Mm-hmm. One thing with our girls, man, we were totally transparent. They knew most of the whole story. Wow. You know, I'm tatted up and stuff. And of course, when they were kids, they were like, what's this skull and what's this blood and what's all this? And it never was like, oh, well, don't pay attention to that. We really tried to walk them through that because we wanted them to know that they were not going to have to grow up the way that we did. And so that transparency in your own family and leading your own family, man, that transfers over completely. And your team or your employees, man, they're going to look at that.
Yep.
And then they're going to be like, hey, that's not the same person. The way they treat their family or their kids and the way they do it here, it's not the same thing. So there again, you're kind of taking away one and two.
Certainly one of the things I admire a lot about Joe is the way I've watched him and his wife for a while and the way he prioritizes family time and Ryan and the way you give him fun experiences. It's not just like, oh, you know, come with that. Like you incorporate him. He actually did his own show. I saw
a gaming show. Nice.
Yeah. I mean, Ryan's 11.
11. Oh, wow.
And him and a friend of his did a gaming show together right over here at the table.
Nice.
And, so I love that about Joe, because Joe's very busy. There's a lot of things on his plate, a lot of goals that he has. He's going to be a marathon runner. He's going to open a coffee shop.
Nice.
Did you like how I said that?
I did.
And so I've watched that. How do you, with all the balls you have going and juggling, how do you navigate creating that time that's essential for family, but I've been in your house. So you're the same person there that you are here in the studio, that you are at church or wherever.
Yeah.
You don't have to wonder like, all right, who am I with and how can I act like you're just Joe?
Yeah. Well, I had the stresses of that before where I tried to play it off and tried to be different and tried to do it the wrong way. And I said, screw this, too much stress. I'm just going to like be me. Mm-hmm. And if there's going to be some people that don't like that, whatever. Question for you. Like my wife and I decided that with my son, we were going to be that transparent and just say the truth and never lie. And that included Santa Clauses and all of that kind of stuff. When we're doing it, we feel a little bit we're making him different and whatever. But at the same time, we're never going to have to answer that question 10 years from now. Like, why did you lie to me? You know, it seems petty because everybody's doing it, but it's just principle. You know?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, yeah.
So did you do Santa Claus and all that sort of stuff?
We didn't. We didn't denigrate the idealism of Santa Claus or Saint Nick, you know. And so we didn't pull any punches, but we also didn't like demean or denigrate. So it wasn't like our kids were going to school going, you're all wrong. You know, you're all.
No, my kids have totally ruined it for other kids in the nursery, elsewhere. They're like, mom, dad, buy all this. Yes. Sorry.
Dad was chomping on the cookies at 2 o'clock in the morning.
We were just having this conversation. So we do a lot of that with our kids. Like we didn't do any like nicknames for body parts. So like we were very clear
you
know, that wasn't your ding-a-ling, like that's your penis. Like we were very direct with that. And what we found is that our kids didn't mind being very direct with other kids. And this is one of those pastor stories. Graham discovered his and was in the nursery and decided that the whole room should also discover his. And so when we came to pick him up, I don't know, he had been three, maybe or four, that he had dropped his drawers and said, look, everybody, and gave a show. And they were like, Pastor Doug, we got to work on this. I was like, I'll have a talk with him, okay?
Transparency has a line.
Can't be over too far.
That's right. Yeah. But when you do create that atmosphere, then you have to parent through that.
Yeah.
So there is a little bit of risk.
Comfortable sharing.
And I think that's why a lot of people don't do it because of what it will take to kind of parent through that. You know, we were very transparent in our house and similar situation, van full of kids is going to somewhere, a camp or something. And our youngest Lizzie, she's in the middle of the thing. And she's like, "Hey everybody, dad and mom take a shower together. We're going to church camp."
Yeah.
Right. Van full of kids are like 6, 7, 8. The leaders are freaking out, you know? And so they get back and the leader comes to Tanya and she's just like, "Oh my gosh, you'll never believe what happened." And she's like, "What?" She's like, "Lizzie said this." And Tanya was like, "Well, it's true." It's true. You know, but then we had to go back and do a little bit of maintenance, you know, but again, it's parenting. It's like, I think so many parents are trying to parent as if they're the child.
Wow.
And they're not, nobody's parenting at all. And I think sometimes parents are not transparent and other times parents are too transparent.
Yeah.
Like if you're discussing with your kids, like about your finances or whatever, they don't need to know that stuff. Right, that's like adult stuff. But as far as like for your life and how you grew up and things that you did and things that you felt, like if your kids think that they're feeling things that nobody else has ever felt, like that isolates them. But if they know that you've felt the same things, you've walked through those same things and maybe not had the direction that you're willing to provide for your kids, and that's huge for kids. But that in leading any kind of team, how you lead outside that team is super important. Again, being who you are.
Yeah. So good. Well, let's switch gears here. Let's talk about coffee because you're passionate about coffee. And Joe wants to talk
about coffee.
Let's get the coffee. So, what the heck?
So you're
all this parenting stuff's not going to help anybody. No. I mean, come on, man.
So you're launching a business.
Yeah.
And so have you launched a business before? Is this the first time entrepreneurial venture?
I've been a part of a lot of different things and logo things and creative stuff and all of that way back when. And then for some reason, it seems like that God has really gifted me in helping people create things. So I don't have the 15 businesses, but I've helped people launch the 15 businesses. Okay. And it seems like that whether that's ideas or whether it's principles or whatever it is, doing leadership coaching, doing leadership calls, all that kind of stuff. But this was just something that kind of shifted everything and I had to reorganize all my hobbies. Coffee and old trucks became my hobbies. So golf had to go and this had to go and this had to go. And I started getting into the science of coffee. And then I was like, man, I really want to start roasting coffee. And so I learned the backstory first and then started roasting. And so I've been doing that for a little while now, about the last year.
Now, when you brew coffee, what type of water do you use? I'm setting you up here.
That would be third wave. So,
boom.
He's very.
Because water matters. You're not being a coffee snob when you do this stuff.
No.
Because ultimately.
He brought his machine in at the church and he goes, I can't make this water. He had to bring
it was tap water. They were making coffee with tap water. Yeah. Come on. So, distilled water, third wave. That's the way to do it.
That's right.
I'm telling you, there is more science behind the roasting and the brewing than anybody realizes.
Yep.
Really?
Yep. Yeah. Oh, it's.
Like, it's not just shove them in the oven and pull them out.
No.
Okay. And it's crazy because people don't realize, like, regions of the world, right? Yeah. So, there are tasting notes built into every coffee cherry because it's a cherry, not a bean. So the bean is like a pit of a cherry, right? So whatever region it's from, if you look at what's grown there, so whether it's fruit trees, whether it's flowers, whatever, that's already in the soil. Mm-hmm. So whatever's grown out of that soil is going to produce that. So that's how you get natural flavors out of, that's right, fruity, nutty, choco. Just look at the region. So if there are apple trees, pear trees, whatever, you're going to be able to extract some of that stuff from the beans. And then all of it, preparation, like how many grams of beans you have, how hot your water is, if you're doing a pour over, if you're doing AeroPress, if you're doing a French press, if you're doing whatever, you know, when people just pull out a coffee maker, I'm going, all right, number one, it's
that water is about to go through plastic, and that water's not going to get as hot as it needs to because it's going through plastic. And once it goes through plastic, you got chemicals in there. Now it's not organic at all anymore.
Ruined.
And it's ruined because it's going through plastic.
The Keurig that's sitting in my office right now, y'all will not be having any coffee from there tonight.
No. Fake coffee, no.
Normally, I've got a bag of my wherever I go because I'm not drinking hotel coffee. I'm not. I'm just not, man.
Well, remember, too, we got like instant Folgers coffee would be the worst version of coffee. So at least you're like in that middle ground if you're just regular coffee.
Yeah, yeah. So in Louisiana, it's community coffee, okay. Right? So you got community coffee with pecan or that. All that's artificial. It's just all... And it just destroys it. So I got into all that and I was like, you know, I want to start roasting. I know something about it now, so I'll start roasting.
And
so
when you watch it, it's not like you said, it's an oven. So the beans are like green when you have
green beans
and you throw them in the roaster, and then there's a computer that interfaces that changes the temperature and when it applied. And
in some roasters. Down. Yeah. Because you've got some roasters that want it to be very, very much artisan and natural. I'm in that camp. So I don't use the artisan software,
okay,
which shows you all your peaks, your first crack, yeah, your second crack, kind of all that stuff. I go convection. I still go convection air and not propane because you can keep the acidity out of it, which coffee drinkers that used to drink coffee that don't anymore, it's because of the reflux and the acid. You convection and you do it air, you create a whole other stream of coffee drinkers now that weren't drinking coffee before. Plus with the air, you can get a creaminess with it and you can get a sweetness out of it that people that add cream and sugar to it don't have to. Right. So like I can do a Brazil that has a Choco note to it, that has a sweetness to it. And then it also feels like it's creamy when it finishes going down your throat, like there's cream in it. So they don't have to ruin their coffee. They can drink black coffee. Yeah. They can drink black coffee and it be awesome.
Wow.
And so, yeah, I just started roasting.
And what's the company called?
The company's called 1900 Roasting Company.
Okay.
And the reason why I went 1900 is because you've got 1900 is kind of that bridge between 19th century, which tells you artisan, handcrafted, kind of before technology, interfacing with the 20th century creativity, industrial revolution, technology. I wanted to marry.
It's like my brother right here.
I wanted to marry those two, that 1900. And so basically that is telling anybody who gets this coffee, like I still hand chaff, like I don't stick it in a fan and let a machine chaff it. I've got a wooden spoon that's slotted. I've got a metal strainer and I got a giant shop fan and I hand chaff it for minutes on end, just chaffing, make sure all the chaff is out. I hand do it. And that's why I continue to do it small batch. I do it small batch. So the beans are high level. The artisanship of it is high level. I can keep focus on one batch and not have to worry about mass producing. And so I went from 16 ounces to 8 ounces. And so I do 8 ounce bags because that just ups the excellence of the bean and a higher level bean. And so I just started doing that. And once that started kicking off, then that 1900 thing just hit me. And then the Roman numeral for 1900 is MCM. And MCM is moments create movement. Coffee creates a moment, and out of that moment comes movement, relationship, creativity, innovation. And that goes all the way back to old dudes sitting outside a garage. How many ideas came out of dudes playing checkers out in front of an old garage somewhere drinking coffee?
Right.
And that moment started with coffee. Coffee creates a moment. And then the way that we say this is even at the church, God creates moments, not just for a moment, not just to go from moment to moment, but to grow from moment to moment. So moments create movement. And so then our little branding, it doesn't look like all the 19 million coffee bean logo things that are out there. It's a bean in the center, but there's movement all around it and it keeps moving. And so coffee's the center and then it creates movement.
That's so cool.
Nice.
So that's kind of how we came with all that branding.
What is your favorite bean then? What is your favorite cup of coffee that you've had that you, hey, I want to reproduce that cup?
There is an Ethiopian, what was called a wush-wush, which is kind of coming from what is called a geisha bean, which is high, high level. This is like heirloom type beans that have been passed on. It's almost like if you get an heirloom, like a bean that you're going to put in a garden, and it's been passed down generationally, like it's an heirloom, right?
Wow.
And so a whoosh whoosh geisha, and I try to reproduce that, but you got to have the right kind of bean for that. It's pretty high level.
Do you have a favorite type of coffee?
Yeah, I like sampling. I the more exotic, I think I gravitate towards, yeah. But I like different.
So you're looking at opening a coffee shop here, yes. Coming up. What does that look like? And Scott's going to supply you some beans.
Yeah, absolutely. So too fast. I started that company, Premium Coffee Box, where I'm going to sample different like roasters that have sort of like a
subscription.
Niche. Yeah. And then send that out. I'm going to basically profile coffees that I come across. And so I'm going to be on search for new, cool beans to throw in that
box. Do you have a location for the new place yet? Or are you hunting?
Well, it's the makerspace. I'm going to have these people there and I'm going to be selling stuff. I decided I'm going to turn it into a coffee bar and let people hang out.
Nice.
Yeah.
That's super cool. And the makerspace, for those of you that don't know, is...
In Struthers.
In Struthers.
Yeah, on Youngstown Pullen Road.
And what can people do there?
And so...
Because I know you just opened it recently.
Yeah. And so it's two rooms. One of the room is sort of like a retail shop that if you make something in the back, you can sell it out in front. The back space is a little workshop area where you can take machines like laser engravers, 3D printers, vinyl plotters, learn how to do the machines.
And you have all those machines there. People don't have to bring them.
Right. So you come there, learn how to use them, and then you could start like making your own stuff and then selling them on the front.
Yeah. Nice.
That's super cool. And so then in the front is going to be the coffee bars.
A little bit of both. So there's going to be a couple seats where you can sit around in the front. And then in the back, I'm going to set up some meeting spaces so that guys that are coming in doing business meetings or whatever can come and have coffee and hatch the next big idea.
Yeah. No, that's very
moments
cool.
Create movement.
Yep.
There it is.
Yep.
Yeah.
So so you're just going to sell this online, basically?
Yeah, I've started, because my full business wasn't established, I just started sending it out to friends, just going, hey, here it is, test it out, give me some feedback. I've taken notes for the last year.
Can you send
year.
Me some? I'd love to try it.
I have 3 pounds.
He's got 3 bags. Yeah. He's got a couple of Brazils and something else, I think. Yeah. And the Brazil bean's a brand new bean. It's the first time I've roasted that.
Okay.
We can
it should be pretty interesting. Yeah, I think it's like... 4 days. I think it's 4 days after roast, which is 5 to 6 days is about primo flavor profile.
Okay.
I know people are like, hey, dump it and then bag it. No way. You got to degas the beans. You got to go 48 to 72 hours, leaving them open, let them degas. See, that's a whole other thing people don't get, man. When you do a pour over and you see like the bloom is what it's called and you see bubbles. Well, that's oxidation. It's pulling that out of the coffee so that it seals in the flavor. So you do that 30-second pour over and it blooms and it's extracting all that oxygenation out of it. And then it seals in that coffee flavor. And then you do the rest of your pour over. That's why a pour over tastes so different.
It does.
It tastes so different because of the way that you're preparing it. So like if I give somebody a coffee bag and I go possible, and I use this, a lot of coffee companies mess this up by going tasting notes are these, and then people prepare it however they're going to prepare it. And then they're mad because it doesn't line up with it. Well, that's because possible tasting notes, because the way you prepare it,
everything.
That's right. So I've got a blueberry note in this that I tested because I did a pour over. If you pull out Mr. Coffee, right, and you just grab your tablespoons and start dumping stuff in, and you're going, this doesn't taste like blueberry. This tastes like tar. It's not the bean. It's the preparation method. And that's why, just like Joe was saying, like the water matters. Like what you do with that bean, how you grind it.
Yeah. Grinding like whole bean versus buying the stuff that's pre-ground, way big difference.
Yeah.
That's why I bought you.
Oh yeah.
That's why I brought you whole bean. Yeah, I didn't bring you ground. I brought you whole bean.
And I only keep like in the hopper, I only keep 2 days worth so that it can, you know, the rest of the beans are sealed in the bag. So it keeps flavor.
Yep.
And then I don't want the rest exposed to air.
All that stuff matters, man.
Yeah, wow.
Do you do pour over or what do? Your dripper?
So we have a French press at home.
Okay.
And that's just because we might drink coffee like 1 or 2 days a week. I drink more coffee here than I do at home.
Okay.
My wife's not a big coffee drinker, and I will have coffee in the afternoon in the office. Usually that 1 o'clock where you start to feel the low after lunch, I'll grab a cup of coffee then or when I come into podcast.
Okay. But that Brazil and that French press will be awesome.
Okay.
Yeah, that's going to be nice.
My wife's excited.
Yeah, the oil French press is cool because it squishes some of the oils out of those beans, and it's a different taste, even with a pour
over.
Yes.
is, and I'm sure I've had one.
I think I have the apparatus out there.
Okay.
So it's a glass carafe that has like a neck that goes up.
Yeah, yeah.
And you pour over top of the beans, but you only pour a little bit and you wait 30 seconds.
Yep.
Real slow.
And then you do like a minute.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And then you let it come up, let it go down a bit. Then you do like another minute. Normally like 245 to 325 is kind of your space sometimes, depending on how many grams you use. Like if you're a 17 to 1 water to bean ratio, if you're 15 to 1 or whatever, all that stuff matters. Like all of it matters.
It is too.
All of it matters. Wow. It really does throughout the whole entire process.
I knew you guys were going to connect. Like, I mean, you say roasting them beans, and I was like, him and Joe are totally going to connect.
You know it. Yeah. But I think, no matter what, I mean, you can get, if you pick an interest like that as a hobby, you can dive into it and find that there's a whole nother level of
people who take it
serious to that level.
Yeah. So to kind of button up the episode in general, leadership, whether you're launching a company, whether you're leading a family, leading yourself or a church, those three principles, I think were really, really key. Any other thoughts on coffee, leadership, or anything else that we talked about?
Well, we're going to have to take notes of how he ordered those, because that was really, eloquent how, those were spaced out a little bit more organized than if we off the cuff. So we'll have to take note and maybe dedicate a show to even extrapolating some more stuff out of that, because there's a lot of depth there.
Oh, yeah. And the authenticity and all of that.
Yeah.
So, well, Scott, thanks for being on, man.
Yeah, man. Thanks for having me. This is awesome.
Next time you're in town, we'll definitely have to do this. I got to have you come and preach it for Job sometime. It should be a lot of fun.
Yeah.
So,
okay,
well, cool. Thanks for listening.
Thank you.
We'll see you next week.
Thank you for listening to this show on Youngstown Studio. If you like our programming, we invite you to subscribe to our YouTube channel, follow our Facebook page, or subscribe to your favorite podcast platform like iTunes or Spotify. This is original Youngstown content, and we would appreciate you sharing the videos and the word about us. Thank you.